Welcome to another episode of the AlbumReview.net podcast. I'm Greg Potters. Thanks to all you listeners out there for your interaction and feedback. Your feedback is much appreciated, and it helps me to always improve. This is episode 2 of a 2-part review of George Harrison's 1970 debut solo album, All Things Must Pass. As in part 1, I'm joined in part 2 by Clementine Moss. If you're not familiar with who Clem is by now, she was a recent guest on episode number 51 of the podcast. She's a founding member and the drummer for the West Coast-based Led Zeppelin powerhouse tribute project, Zepparella. Clem is also a spiritual counselor and an author. She recently published a book, From Bonham to Buddha and Back. You can get a copy of that at albumreview.net in the bookstore. Or you can get a copy and learn more about Clem at clementinemoss.com or clemthegreat.com. So if you haven't heard part 1 yet, go back and listen to episode 56, which is part 1. For this episode, it's our time down here to talk about George and All Things Must Pass. Our time. Down here is our time.
Don't you realize? The next time you see Sky, it'll be over another town. The next time you take a test, it'll be in some other school. Our parents, they want the best of stuff for us. But right now they gotta do what's right for them. Cause it's their time. Their time. Up there. Down here, it's our time. It's our time down here. That's all over the second we ride up Troy's bucket.
Okay, you ready? Sit forward or keep up that awful pace if you're pretending to exercise right now, but you're really just looking at your phone. And enjoy part 2 of this 2-part review of George Harrison's All Things Must Pass. I was pleased to learn, and again going back to the documentary, that when he died in 2001, he was really at peace. He was 58 years old, which is just so young. But there was a scene in the documentary where Ringo is talking about going to see him for the last time, and Ringo breaks down crying during this interview, and I couldn't help but, you know, get teary myself. But then Ringo was like, he cheered me up when I went and saw him. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit here and not quoting, but I just thought that was beautiful, that George was like, yeah, you know, I've done a lot, you know, this sucks, but you know, there's more out there. And a lot of that had to have come from obviously his spirituality and really the life change that he made in the mid 60s when he started learning the teachings of Ravi Shankar. Was he a dedicated Buddhist?
He declared? Was a Hindu.
Yeah, Hindu. Okay. Yeah, Hindu. And so, I mean, just something like that, to be at peace. I hope that I can, you know, whenever my day comes, I hope that I can be like that. Getting back to some of the songs, and I'm skipping over a few of them, and I definitely want to leave some songs if I've missed them. But just, we were talking earlier about when the Beatles were in the studio recording Get Back, there were scenes where George presented All Things Must Pass, Hear Me, Lord, and Let It Down during those rehearsals. And like I said, there was actually footage of George playing them for Paul and John. And then they were like, okay, let's get back to work. And I also mentioned that, you know, this album, the commercial success, even though this isn't necessarily anything that George was looking for, it hit number one on the US top 100 Billboard charts. The song All Things Must Pass reached number one on the top 100 songs. At one point in 1971, both the album and the song were at the top of the charts together, beating out Lennon and McCartney's solo albums that were released around the same time. And so the RIAA, the Recording Industry Association of America, certified the album 6 times platinum. And I think right now, I don't know how much juice anybody puts on this, but I like reading them. The Rolling Stones 500 best albums of all time, they have that at, last I checked, number 79. So the point I'm trying to make, it's not about, you know, and George would be the first one to say it had nothing to do with that. He just wanted to get these out. But imagine if the Beatles had put out a record of all George's songs, and then they had put out a record of all Paul's songs, and they had put out a record of all John. I mean, like the thousands and thousands of songs that we are gifted to have today of the Beatles, there'd be thousands more. And I guess I think that this is what makes this album so much more special, because this was really George's way of vocalizing and voicing his, you know, what he'd been going through and what he'd been writing for so long. And although I wasn't alive in 70, I'm willing to bet that there were a lot of folks that were like, geez, I knew this guy was talented, but I didn't realize it was anything like this. And I'm sure there were others that were not surprised at all, that knew George had a lot of this in him. And so,
yeah, well, talking about wanting things to be different, I'm really happy that the Beatles didn't do those, because, you know what? I mean, I'm sure they would have been wonderful, but they wouldn't have been this outpouring that you hear in this feeling of freedom, this feeling of experimentation, this feeling of like super heartfelt stuff coming here. You know, I'm happy that George had this moment, and really, I feel a sense of breaking away.
Yeah.
I read that story that at around this time he went to visit the band, Bob Dylan and the band in Woodstock. And he was really struck by, by how well they all were kind of, you know, all contributing at the same time. And, you know, felt really sad about that. I maybe think this is just a non sequitur, but it made me think that of a long ago when I was in an original band, and we toured with another band, and they were having so much fun, and we were kind of like coming on the downward spiral of the band. And, you know, I remember saying, oh, you guys are having so much fun. And Tim saying, well, yeah, if you're not having fun, then what are you doing?
Why are you doing this? Yeah.
And it's just like, it was like a light bulb that just went off in my head. Like, what am I doing? Why am I putting myself through this torturous emotional stuff? I really understood what George was feeling when he experienced that. And I love that he did a Bob Dylan song on this album. You know, it's a great cover. Yeah.
I wonder if McCartney was ever asked, like, you know, did you know George had what he had in his tank? And if so, you know, how do you feel about, I don't know. I've listened to so many McCartney interviews, because obviously he and Ringo are still alive. And I think Paul does a lot more interviews than Ringo. I feel like during the pandemic, I heard hundreds of interviews, and McCartney even did a solo record during the pandemic. I'm blanking on the name of it now, but I listened to it.
Yeah, they put his first two solo. They found all of these old copies of the first two solo, and they pressed it into the vinyl. of the one that he did during the pandemic. So there are like 3,000 that were made with these.
Oh, wow.
Dots in the vinyl.
Oh, wow.
The first two records.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think they did that with Third Man. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to find and it wasn't something that I did for this episode that I'd be curious to find, because Paul seems like such a, when I saw him in concert last year, he seemed like such a happy mm-hmm. person, and somebody that, you know, I'm willing to bet that when he lays his head down at night and he thinks about George and he thinks about John, he doesn't necessarily just break down into tears, that he just remembers the good times and the joy. He must, because he's asked about them so often. Yeah. And I feel like I've never once heard him say, and maybe he puts on a different act, for lack of a better word, in an interview, because he realizes he's there and he wants to be presentable. But
he seems pretty authentic. I mean,
I agree.
I feel like that's like they went through something nobody else went through.
Yeah.
You know, I have old bandmates that I don't speak to, and I love them with all my heart, you know? So it's, you know, it just is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Relationships are difficult, and brother relationships, you know, creative brother relationship is just kind
totally.
Of what they were.
Totally. They're marriages. I mean, obviously you're in a band now, Zeppelin, very successful act, but you've been in several other bands, and you're absolutely right, especially when you're writing music and it's mm-hmm. The writer, whoever he or she brings that to the table, and if the others don't take it seriously, I can remember being in that same situation that George was in Get Back, where, you know, I would say, hey guys, I got a new one, and mm-hmm. you know, I'd start playing it, and then they'd be like, hey, let's go get a pizza, and I was like, come on, listen, I'm pouring my heart out here. Hang on, you know. And
I know. And from their point of view, they're like, okay, we're the Beatles.
Right.
We have like this specific thing that we think we're supposed to,
this formula.
You know, that we need to do,
yeah.
you know, like,
right. That's a good point.
And we have the like, we're the guys talking to the label. We're the guys talking to the thing. Like, we got this thing and we have this idea about what it's going to be. And
right.
Especially I think at that point, you know,
yeah. Yeah.
Probably was, you know, I'm sure that he knew exactly how talented George was. Doesn't seem like any of them suffered fool.
No, I don't think so either. And I admire them so much more for halting their touring. Mm-hmm. I mean, that made them even more mysterious, right? Howard Stern made a comment that, you know, in the 60s and 70s and even the 80s, bands were mysterious. You know, you didn't, mm-hmm. they weren't on necessarily on social media, like, hey, I'm at a restaurant and I'm eating a sandwich. And
you didn't even really know what they looked like.
You didn't really even, unless they were on the jacket of the album, you didn't know, or you didn't know what they looked like. And so I think that added to their mystery, but also I think it was really, you know, gutsy and ballsy for what they did. I'm going to just go on and on about documentaries. I've seen so many of them, but there was one Long Strange Trip, I believe, a Amazon documentary about the Grateful Dead.
Uh-huh.
And the scene that stuck out the most to me was when towards the end of Jerry's life, so this was 95, because he died in August of 95, and his then wife said, Jerry, like, you're miserable, your health is not good, like, let's hang it up.
Yeah.
And he turned and looked at her and he said, do you realize how many people depend on me? Like, the amount of people that we have as part of the Grateful Dead engine, we're a corporation. And if I just raise my hand and say I'm done, I'm going to disappoint thousands of people, not even to mention the fans. Mm-hmm. It made me really sad, because it was like Jerry felt trapped in this, in this world. And it didn't sound like the Beatles did. The Beatles were just like, all right, we're done, for better or for worse. We're not going to stop making music, but we're now going to kind of go off on our own ways. But is there another band that you can think of, Clem, that was so good,
mm-hmm.
and then they broke up, and then all of the members of the band put out albums that were arguably just as good, in some cases, possibly even considered better? Like, were there any? I can't, I mean, maybe Eric Clapton, but like Clapton was sort of a, Clapton was the kind of guy like Neil Young, where he didn't really like to commit to a band for too long. You know, he was in a band for 2 years and he was like, okay, I'm done.
Right. Right.
But I can't think of any other.
Yeah. Where they
Zeppelin,
all kind of.
Zeppelin formed. Hung it up the day, you know, after Bonham died, it was like, all right.
But they all did really interesting things.
You're right. Afterwards. They've done a lot of solo stuff. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, I shouldn't discredit that.
Yeah, they really did a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, you see Dave Grohl becoming hugely successful.
Yeah, great point. Hugely, almost larger.
Right. That's right. Yeah. So to have the whole band, like everybody in the band kind of, you know, step out after the breakup and create these really seminal records. I mean, you know, we could go on forever about Paul McCartney's first record. That record meant so much to me when I was
Ram.
I love that record so much. There's so much magic in that record.
Uncle Albert is my favorite Paul McCartney solo song. Yeah.
And then, you know, all of Lennon's stuff. I mean, good
all
grief.
It
just hits me so deeply. So
a couple of weeks ago, I mean, obviously June now, but the weather similar to San Francisco, like Boston can be, you know, 90 one day and then 50 the next. Mm-hmm. And the weather started to get consistently, this is about a month ago, consistently warm. Mm-hmm. And I have a Jeep and I took the top off my Jeep and I was driving around and the song Mother, Floyd's mother, but John Lennon's mother came on the radio. And,
oh, man.
There I was again at a red light, looking for a tissue, wiping the tears away from my face.
It's
like
okay to cry constantly. I've just accepted that.
I do it
tears.
All the time, Clem.
You know, I feel like that's the sign of someone who's really in the moment. You know, it's
well, thank
like
you
things
for saying
move,
that. Yes.
Things move through us, right?
Yes.
And, you know, we don't need them to stay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good. I do feel better afterwards, but I just, like you, I listen to the lyrics and I just become so moved. And I was telling my wife one day, you know, I said, some days I catch myself, like, for instance, I'll paint the picture. I'm at a park and I see someone walk by, you know, a man or a woman with his or her child. And I'll just start to wonder, I wonder what his life is like right now, or I wonder what her life is like. I wonder if they're happy. And sometimes when I share that, I get the strangest looks from the people that I tell that to, because they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah, I'm very much there in the moment. If you set the perfect background where it's a beautiful day and it's quiet and the birds are chirping and the sun is shining and I see someone walking their dog and I'm like, you know, I wonder if that person's really happy or if they're struggling or, you know.
And, you know, the beautiful thing that you can do too is what we were just talking about was to see somebody and think they're no doubt going to struggle even if they're not now. But can I see that spark of stillness, that spark of love, that spark of the divine within them, you know? I remember doing this practice for a little while where I would try to see, like, there's an idea of having a higher self, right? Like kind of maybe you would see it as like, you know, you're like, if we're born here and we have this kind of potential in us, you know, that's always trying to help us move forward, right? Can I see that person's like, true self, their true essence at the middle, right? In their center. And it's funny because sometimes I'll get like a little image like fireflies or like sunshine or spark. Like, can you see, you know, it's a really fun thing to not wonder if they're suffering because we all suffer, right?
Yeah.
But to look and see, like, can I see that spark within them, that higher self or that truer part of themselves beneath all the struggle, beneath all the emotion, like where is that joy within them?
A lot of this is, you're absolutely, that's such a good point. So hearing you say this, I think it does, with with some pain, you know, again, yeah. All things must pass. And I,
well,
I,
right. And we see that, I mean, you, I'm sure, experienced this with when you had your mom pass away. And it's like some people, this was shocking to me. My father died when I was 27. And it was shocking to me when I came back from California and the funeral and everything, how some people didn't even mention it. People who are close to me.
Right.
You know, never even yeah. mentioned it.
Right.
And I was so startled by that. But I realized that I, too, had behaved in that way in the past. And we have this thing like, I don't want to bring it up.
Right.
I don't want to remind them
yeah.
of their suffering.
Exactly.
And I didn't recognize that until a little while later. And then I realized how important it is when somebody has a tragedy in their life for people to reach out and say, I'm thinking of you. I'm sorry. You know, totally. This happened. I've been there. And I think that we're connected in that, like, as we get older, we realize, you know, I used to be so embarrassed of my mom talking to everybody in the grocery store and stuff. Now I'm that lady, right? Because I recognize that there are, you Me know, too. that we do need this connection.
Yeah.
And the yeah. final thing I'll say about that too is like, yeah, if we turn off our social media and we just walk around for 3 days, 98% of humans that we interact with
yeah.
are so lovely.
Yeah.
We don't talk about politics. We don't talk about, you know, blah, blah, blah. We talk right. about, you know, we just talk about the day. We talk yeah. about, you know, this lovely way of connecting. And I know that a lot of us don't live in places where we walk around a lot, but it's super worth it.
Yeah.
It's really, really worth it.
Yeah. It's like my favorite thing to do now. I mean, I guess not to take away from playing bass or playing guitar, but that was, you know, I would get home from school and do that. But like now my favorite thing to do is a glass of wine, a record, maybe put it on a little medium or low volume and just talk to someone. I mean, like we're doing here right now. I mean, it's literally what I look forward to every day. And I'm lucky that I get to do it too in my job. So I didn't want to take away from any other songs that you felt were special to you. I wanted to bring those out in the open and talk about those.
Yeah. So I mentioned it before, but you know, one song that just really tugs at my heart is that isn't a pity.
Yeah.
You know, how we break each other's hearts and cause each other pain. You know, I can hear this in the breakup that he's going through with the Beatles. And also I can hear it with somebody who, you know, when you do start really connecting to that part of yourself that is stillness, is connected to kind of a bigger awareness of us all kind of moving in this one, you know, in this one big thing that we're all kind of moving through, you start to really, you know, when your heart opens to compassion and the kind of empathy you're talking about, looking at someone and wondering, getting inside of them, wondering what they're feeling. I feel like this song always kind of tugs at me a little bit because it is a pity that we
yeah.
don't recognize. It is a pity that we let so much get in the way of true connection, of the vulnerability to ask for help or to be able to reach out to somebody and say, hey, I see you. You know, I'm sorry.
Anymore.
we all regret ways that we've behaved in relationships.
Totally.
You know, this feels that way.
When I first heard this song, I listened to more of the technicality around it. And again, I can remember where I was. I just have all these visions of riding the subway to work in Boston every day. But when I came back and really fell in love with this, I would say 2-3 years ago, really during the pandemic, that I played this nonstop for like a week in my house. And I started listening to the lyrics again. And same as you, Clem, I got the same feeling. And I was really listening to George's lyrics and thinking the same thing. And I say that a lot, like, I'm not going to get political, but I get sad when politics are brought up, because more so today than ever, it's such a war in this country between the two sides. And, you know, there was always some competition, I feel, but, that really makes me upset. And so I think about that. It saddens me, but it also makes me feel lucky for what I have. So I've had, despite the title of the song, Unlike All Things Must Pass, this is actually really giving me good feelings.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that a shame? You know, isn't that a shame that, you know, you were saying something earlier in this podcast about, oh, like the individual who is egotistical and you know, you used to, as a child, you look at them, that jerk, I want to push them back. And now we just look at them like, oh man, I feel bad for them. They're bleeding inside. And you know, that's why they're acting that way. It's so clear. I mean, when you see
it's so clear
that,
and fear,
yeah,
you know, like you yeah. really see, I heard the other day, anger is just another expression of fear.
Totally.
And I really thought about that. Like, anger is another expression of fear, and all of the anger, all of the vitriol that, you know, is being exchanged in political aspects, it's because there's been a big manipulation of fear.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's coming out is anger because people are afraid. And
yep.
Yeah, and afraid of other people. And that's why I love to play music, because
exactly.
when I play a rock concert, there are all different sides of the aisle who come to a Zeppelin show
exactly.
for sure, you
yep.
know, and
One,
we're
yep.
all together with music we love, the vibration of love, one of the love that I have playing my drums, hitting the drums. I want to express love and have that sound through the bodies in all connecting us, all surrounding us. So when we go outside and people are smoking a cigarette or having a drink and they're at the bar, they're not thinking of you voted for that guy. You think this way.
Totally.
You know, I think it's just really a magical connection. And it makes sense that during the pandemic, things got even more heated because we weren't all together.
Right. Right.
We weren't all in a big room together, letting our molecules all get mixed up with each other, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I made a promise to myself again. I mean, and I do this frequently, but because you sort of dip back into your own your old habits. But, you know, I've been working remotely now for 3 years and doing this podcast and traveling a little bit. But for the most part, I'm at home, and I'm a dad and a husband as well. But I made a promise to myself that I'm going to get out more and just not be trapped in the house as much, hence the reason why I'm doing this from my studio outside of my house today. But it just, yeah, just a day spent with other people, whether they're similar to you or different from you, it gives you such a better perspective of everything. I just crave today, I crave information and I crave learning, and I want to end every day with, I learned something new today.
Yeah.
And that's what I've enjoyed the most about being an adult is that I haven't stopped wanting to learn, because in college, full disclosure, I was like so sick of this learning thing. I just want to play my bass and I want to hang out with my friends and I want to write music, and all this other stuff is getting in the way. And now, you know, I kind of wish I could go back and and really pay attention more and learn a lot more. But I can do that today. And that's mm-hmm. why I read a lot more. Have your book, by the way. I think I shared that with you. But yeah, no, I've got your book. That's on my reading list. What other song? Oh, sorry, you had a thought. Keep going.
Oh, I was just going to tell a little story. But
go for it.
Oh, I was just thinking about I love this story. You know, during the pandemic, we live in San Francisco, so everything was completely shut down. And
right.
We were getting in arguments at the beginning. You just didn't know what was going on. And I remember getting in a big fight with my husband in the laundromat. We go the street to, I live in an apartment. So we went up to the laundromat and I was like, you know, the call of Andrew Dalton. You know, we were freaks, right? Yeah, I think everybody kind of was like, oh my God, can I not touch anything? Like,
oh whatever. My, I used to wipe down my mail.
That's what we did too.
Every day.
Right. We all went through this. It's so funny. We all went, now we look back and it seems kind of funny, but I mean, it was, you know, we were
surreal.
All worked out.
It was,
yeah, it was surreal.
Yeah.
And we went down, it was, you know, maybe a month into the lockdown, and we were walking the dog around and we went down and there is a woman, she's maybe 60 years old, and she lives, there's a little kind of monthly apartments down there for a lot of people who are very fixed income, I think, have lived in this little hotel down the street for a long time.
That's good to know that those still exist in San Francisco.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Those were few and far between these things.
Well, a lot of them you wouldn't want to walk into, but this right. one is actually, you know, it's in the middle of kind of, a nicer
oh, that's good.
Neighborhood. So she lives down there and I'd seen her before and she saw the dog and she said, oh, you know, do you mind if I pet the dog? I know a lot of people don't want me to pet the dog because of the pandemic, but could I pet the dog? And we're like, yeah, go ahead. And so she was petting Henry and she said, you know, I live alone. And she said, I haven't touched anybody, you know,
living,
and it's just so nice to touch another being, you know.
Yeah.
And she stood up and my husband just like wrapped his arms around her.
That's
and
awesome.
We all just burst into tears. It was so touching.
Yeah.
You
That's
know,
awesome.
So you're making me think about, you know, we just don't know what we're presented with when we go walk out the door.
How totally.
We can. Little things help people, you know,
yeah.
anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure she still remembers that.
Yeah.
I'm sure
yeah.
she does.
I certainly do.
Yeah. There you go. What are some other songs that you think?
Yeah. Let It Down is one that I love. I can feel you here, looking like I don't care, but I do, hiding it all. Just someone be looking at me. While I occupy my mind, I can feel you here. Love to us is so time, and I do wasting away these moments so heavenly. Should someone be looking at me? Thank you. I really love that one. We haven't even talked about My Sweet Lord.
My Sweet Lord.
Which, you know, we know that, you know, he had to pay money because it sounded like another song later on. I'm very forgiving of that kind of thing because I know what it's like as an artist to write something. Like sometimes I'll write lyrics and be like, did I steal that from somebody? And
right.
I'll Google a phrase just right. to see if the phrase came. Like, did it come through me?
Refresh us again. What was the song? Because I'm blank. What was the song?
He's So Fine. He's So Fine. It was the Shirelles or
okay.
But it has the same, you know, chord progression.
Right.
And
come back to me now. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, George Harrison. So it's like, there are eight notes.
I don't think that guy needs to steal a song.
Like, yeah, I know. Right? It just comes, you know, comes out. I can't. Somebody just told me that there was something that just happened where
Ed Sheeran just had a huge
where he went and he was like, I'm going to play 100 songs that have
the most
same
amazing
thing.
Like, yeah. he was so prepared. I do not dislike this guy. In fact, I actually really like him and admire him. I don't know if I'd go out and spend $500 on a show, but I gained so much respect for him. And when I heard this, and he shows up in court, and you're right, he's like, gets up with his acoustic guitar and plays for the jury like 50 songs that all have the exact same chords, and they're all different. And he was on Howard Stern a couple of weeks ago, and he did a little excerpt of that like live.
I
got a taste of it because we, you know, this court hearing wasn't live on TV,
right?
At least I don't think it was, and I got just a taste of it and was laughing. And you're absolutely right, so many times I'm sitting on the couch and a song just comes to me and I run over. I've got a guitar in almost every room in my house.
Okay.
I don't want to make myself sound like some rich person, like these are low cost guitars. I do have my one that I spent a good amount of money on, but like, although I play bass, I write on an acoustic guitar, like I think a lot of musicians, and then later we'll translate it to the rest. Yeah, I'll run over and pick up the guitar and just start playing, and I'll grab a pen and a paper and start writing. And yeah, sometimes I'm like, wait a minute, did I just hear a song in the car and that's why this melody is in my head? Wait a second. There's so much out there. I mean, it's how many, right? I mean, Ed said it, like how many songs are, you know, what's the chord progression? It was like A, D. I mean, the amount of songs that I've written that were like in A, then to D, to A, and then to D, and then the chorus is G to C.
Yeah.
You know, it's half of my songs.
Right? I know.
Those chords are just, they're just so good, you know? So.
As Ringo said, he writes... on guitar, he writes in E, and on piano, he writes in C. I kind of took it. That's kind of how I do it,
I love
too.
That.
And let, like, the real people, like, figure out, like, something new.
Right, yeah. How about some other songs? Are there any others that were special to you?
I kind of really love all of them. I mean, I'm going through What Is Life is really wonderful. Behind That Locked Door is amazing.
Anything in particular about Behind That Locked Door that you like?
To me, this kind of feels like, you know, when you think about him writing not only to, you know, the Beatles, but also possibly to his marriage. I think that. I kind of feel that here. Feels like he was in a big time of transition, right?
Why are you still crying? Your pain is now through. Please forget those.
The other song that I really wanted to talk about too was
I'd
Have You Anytime.
Yeah.
I think that's such a bold first song because it's
very mellow.
We're here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's not this big proclamation. It's just kind of like,
great point.
You're going to be fine. Yeah. Like we kind of slide into the song almost.
In here, I know I've been here. Let me into your heart. Let me know you. Let me show you.
You're absolutely right. Like a lot of records, especially rock bands, you know, there's just this, like Zeppelin 4, right? Doesn't it open with Black Dog? You know, Zeppelin 1 opens with Communication Breakdown. That's the first song we ever hear by Led Zeppelin.
Isn't it Good Times, Bad Times?
I'm sorry. You're right.
Good Times, Bad Times. Yeah. It's just the first thing. It's like,
Dan out. Yes. Oh my God. Can't wait to see you guys in concert. Like right now, I have to get by with, you know, with YouTube. But I'm gonna have.
It's so much better. I feel bad if people have only seen us in YouTube. It's a live band.
I can get into any vibe that the band wants to put off. I'm glad you brought this up because I forgot to really put this in my notes. That this is such an interesting opening track, and I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall during the time where George was sitting there, whether he was talking with his manager or whether he was talking with Bill Spector on how to track the album, what to put on first.
He starts with love, he's speaking to someone.
When you get to a certain point where you have enough clout, you know, maybe you can take more risks like that. They wanted you to feel a certain way. Going back to your point, I feel like it's interesting because I think this does kind of buck the trend a little bit if you're talking about popular records. But again, that's George. George is probably like, I want to start it with this good vibe, this good feeling.
Everybody has their idea exactly of how you want people to experience these things. And it can be really it can really change. You know,
I kind of always look at Pink Floyd as one of the bands that meticulously, like more than any other band, it had to be in that order,
no matter
what.
Yeah, right.
And whereas other bands, I feel like you could have flip-flopped one or the other and it wouldn't have been that big a deal. There were still great songs, and not to take anything away from Floyd, but it was like, I just, their idea of a concept album just to me was greater than anybody's.
Yeah. And that really, you know, you do hear records where it feels like song, 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 song.
Yeah.
And then you do hear records that have a kind of flow.
Totally. The Who, like a lot of Who records, especially Tommy, Quadrophenia. Mm-hmm. I'm working on one right now for Who's Next.
That was my high school.
Oh my God. I love that record. And, you know, so maybe that's another example along with Floyd. But anyway, before we close, is there anything else that I might have missed or anything that you wanted to touch upon?
Art of Dying is really an amazing kind of, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about, you know, the end of life. And there's something in Tibetan Buddhism where there's a practice where you're meditating on death 5 times a day. Right. And this is in order to realize the beauty of all things do pass, right? You're there to recognize that, you know, just a reminder, it's not always going to be here. Just a reminder, you're not always going to be here. And in a way, it brings you more and more and more in the moment. I think that's what the practice is kind of meant to do. And the idea that, you know, to have a good death is one that, like what George had, where he was in peace.
He was at peace.
I think David Bowie was a similar way. I think there's a picture of him the day before he passed. And he's just got a big smile on his face. We should all hope that, right?
Yeah.
And there are practices that over our lifetime kind of help us come to that place of peacefulness. You know, I mean, we should all be so lucky to pass away surrounded by our dear friends the way that George was, right?
Right. We can hope.
Yeah, we can hope. So I kind of love that he put a song called The Art of Dying.
I think that's really cool. I don't know if you can hear it in the background now. I just put it on to remind myself because there's so many tracks. That's why you listeners out there, you just got to get this album. Just if you haven't already, you can always pull it up on a platform, but this is an own. You have to own this album if you're a Beatles fan or even if you're just a rock and roll fan. And so I'm listening to The Art of Dying right now, and this is one that I passed over a couple times for no other reason than I just missed it. It's very rocky. I can hear Clapton's guitar in the background. It's got to be his guitar.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, there's very few songs with Clapton in it that I out there in the ether that I don't like. But you're right. I think that this is a really interesting title as well. And his lyrics are very moving. There is a kind of an art to dying. I feel like I need to wrap things up. But before doing that, could you share I know you've got a couple dates coming up soon, some tour dates on the West Coast. I peeked at your schedule of the day, and it's California, Washington. I think you're in Spokane and maybe Seattle, but you're also in Oregon, Portland maybe, or Eugene. What are some of your upcoming shows for Zeparella that you've got?
Yeah, we're going to get back to Illinois, which I'm really
excited about.
Yeah.
Chicago or outside?
Des Plaines. I don't know how you say Des Plaines. And the Arcata Theater. Can't think of where that is.
Cool.
Yeah, right outside of Chicago. And then, up to Spokane. We haven't played in Spokane before, so I'm happy to get back up there. And then Washington.
I like that
State.
Area.
And then we're always booking something. So yeah, I just go where they tell me to go. Oh, you just reminded me of the biggest thing that I wanted to say about this album, which is that music brought George Harrison to his spirituality. Meeting Ravi Shankar, following yes. his guitar to the sitar, brought him to the spiritual teachers. It all, like, music was the one that brought him into it. So I feel very connected to him in that, because it was in playing the drums that a lot opened up for me in those realms of music, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we touched upon that a little bit earlier, but yeah, that was such a, there's a scene in Get Back where there's some Hare Krishna folks, I don't know how else to say it, that were like kind of sitting in the corner during the recording sessions. And
I think they were all through this recording, you know, because he was going to a Hare Krishna ashram, right? He saw himself as a Hare Krishna. So
yeah.
So I feel like that it's all over this record.
I couldn't help but, this sounds a little mean, but I couldn't help but think, like, I wonder if Paul, like, just like pictured him like walking in the studio and being like, George, why are there like four men sitting in the corner?
It was a different time though, you know, because it was so new and so exotic and so like, it felt like, you know, like so much was opening up about the way we were seeing
totally.
It. I'm sure, you know, I heard that story about how when they were with the Maharishi, when they all went to India and then they left because the Maharishi supposedly was hitting on a couple of the girls and,
oh,
you know,
Jesus.
They all, you know, yeah. But somebody told me recently that was a made up story that happened.
Yeah,
so
that sounds
I guess we'll never know.
That'd be wild, huh? I guess.
Yeah.
You know,
well, not really. Most of those, a lot of those guys ended up doing a bunch of jerky stuff, you know, a lot of people out of balance.
Totally.
You know, they get that power and they forget.
Yep.
They forget what they're doing.
Well, so I've got your schedule up right here. So July 1st at the Crystal Bay Casino in Crystal Bay, Nevada. This is Zeparella, Clem's band. The Knitting Factory in Spokane on July 6th. The Redwood Theater in Bremerton, Washington on July 7th. And then on the 8th, you move on to a town, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this correctly, Anacortes.
Anacortes, Washington.
Anacortes, yes.
That's
Washington.
One of those. Yeah.
And then you're in Eugene, Oregon at the Cupper Theater on August 5th. You have another gig in Concord, California. So if you want to catch Zeparella, you can go to, there's 100 different websites. You can go to clemthegreat.com, right? You can go to zeparella.com, ZEPARELLA.com. Find them also at Zeparella Official on Instagram. And I'm sure you're on all the other platforms, social media platforms as well. So in closing, I have to say that whether you're a Beatles fan or not, I recommend adding this album, All Things Must Pass, to your collection. You can't help but feel all of George's passion when you hear the album, and you wonder what the Beatles might have been if they had stayed together and continued sharing equally with their songwriting. We'll never know, but it's fun to think about. So Clem, thanks so much for joining me. And I don't want this to be the end. I want us to do another one in the future. And when you have other music that you want to talk about as well, I would be honored to have you back on the podcast again as well, because I enjoy this. These are, you know, these are like the best conversations that I've had with anyone. I don't want to insult my other guests that I've had on the podcast, but, you know, you really are you really are an awesome person. And thank you. I'm in the best mood now today. And after just chatting with you about some of my favorite things in the world and just feeling your enthusiasm and your positivity, it always resets my mind. So thank you so much.
I feel that way about speaking with you too, Greg. I just appreciate how you really are just so connected to your own truth and your ability to really feel deeply. And you know that I'm sure that you're a light for all of those in your life.
Thank you. Thank you. Likewise. Seriously, likewise. I can't wait to see Zeparella live.
I know. I keep telling her, like, let's go to Boston.
Well, I've also got family in San Francisco. He's hanging on by a thread. He's my great uncle. I love this man to death. The first time I ever went to San Francisco was 1996. And my uncle picked me up at the airport. And the first thing he said to me, I'm probably getting him in trouble for saying this. And he was like, he goes, we're going to go have a cocktail. And then we're going to go to Berkeley tonight to a jazz club. And I was like, you are the coolest person I've ever.
Yeah.
You know, he was like the guy who loved jazz and he loved, you know, had no interest in sports. So I would talk football with him and he'd zone out right away. But he'd be like, let's go to, let's go somewhere for a cocktail and then we'll have a nice dinner. And then let's go. It was called Yoshi's, which I don't even know if that exists anymore.
It does
it really?
Oh, it does. God. Yeah.
That was my first jazz club experience.
That is so amazing. So who did you see?
Oh my God. I wish I could remember. I remember being so blown away by the music. I can remember everything about it except for the artist's name. I don't know if it was anybody that like we would have known that's super famous, I don't know, but that was my, so anyway, he's there. And each time I've gone out to San Francisco, I've made a note to spend time with him as well. But yeah, my next visit, I'm going to have to see a Zeparella show. And
definitely. So,
well, enjoy the rest of your, or I guess enjoy the start of your weekend. And I can't thank you enough for all of this.
Thank you so, so much for everything. Really, it really is a highlight.
I said to my wife one day, I don't think she was like looking to have this conversation, but I just said, I said the one thing that I want, like I want to leave a mark after I'm gone. And she, she was spiritual and she was trying to be upbeat and positive and be like, well, Greg, your being is your, yourself is your, you don't feel like you have to have these tangible. And I was like, well, I just do. And so, you have your music. I have some of my music, that's out there, but also these. And so I hope that one day my kids can just, they want to hear my voice.
Yeah.
They can just go back to these and.
Kids and your grandkids and your grandkids.
Exactly.
It just goes into the future.
And you'll be out there too. And that's why that's what I mean about like leaving a mark. It's not so much, to grab any fame. It's more just so people know more about you. Because I really don't know much about my great grandparents and all that. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, have a good, have a good everything.
A cloudburst doesn't last all day. Seems my love is up and has left you with no warning. It isn't always gonna be this great. All things must pass. All things must pass away.
Thanks again for listening to the albumreview.net podcast and today's episode, part two of a two-part review of George Harrison's 1970 debut solo album, All Things Must Pass. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. This one was a little different from past reviews. Clem and I seemed to focus more on how this album made us feel. It was less of a listing the facts as past reviews and more of a glimpse inside how each of us thinks about music and our vulnerabilities and our hopes and dreams. I can't thank my guest enough again, Clementine Moss, for being such a great person and a great teammate in this rock journey. Both episodes felt like a therapy session for me. Clem knows how to look at the bright side of every rock. As previously mentioned, Clem is also a spiritual counselor and an author. She recently published a book, From Bonham to Buddha and Back. You can check this out and pick up a copy of your own at clementinemoss.com or clemthegreat.com. Also, if you're interested in any of the albums or books I've discussed in this episode or previous episodes, go to albumreview.net and pick up a copy of your own. Listen to all my podcast album reviews at albumreview.net by clicking on the podcast tab. They can also be heard wherever podcasts are available. Please follow the show on your preferred platform so you can get regular updates on new episodes. Also, gotta mention this one. If you guys would be so kind as to pop a quick review or rate the podcast, that helps move the needle and get the word out there. And I do want to hear from you. Please email me your feedback, album review requests, and any questions you may have to gpotters@albumreview.net. That's gpotters@albumreview.net. If you'd like to get regular updates on reviews, interviews, product and music news, go to the homepage and join the mailing list. Visit our YouTube page and stay tuned for updates on Instagram, Facebook, and that thing they call TikTok. You can find me at albumreview.net. Thanks again, guys. Until next time.
Take a trip down by the highway. Take a trip down by the highway. Take a trip down by the highway. Take a trip down by